Hey there, podcast listeners. I love using NovoPsych, which is why I'm really pleased for them to come on as a sponsor to our show. NovoPsych is the ultimate tool for administering psychological questionnaires, tracking outcomes, and informing treatment. With NovoPsych, you can easily access a wide range of evidence-based questionnaires and assessment tools. There's no more time-consuming scoring. It's all done very easily and automatically. There's over 100 psychometric tools available. NovoPsych has assessments for specific things like trauma, personality, and many other presenting issues that will really help a schema therapist understand complex presentations. What I really like is having all your client data securely stored in one place. It has really cool graphs and clear visualizations, which clients really like too. So if you're ready to enhance your practice, visit NovoPsych.com today and start your free trial.
Hi, you're listening to What's the Schemata, a schema therapy podcast for therapists. With ISST accredited schema therapy supervisors and trainers, Chris Hayes and Rob Brockman. For more information on schema therapy, visit our website, schematherapytraining.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to What's the Schemata. This is the monthly deep dive into schema therapy, and I'm with the mode mystic, Rob Brockman. Hi, Rob.
Thanks. That's a good one, Chris. How long have you plugged that into AI?
Yeah, that's true. Look, ChatGPT really helped me, and I've got an arsenal to get back at you.
All right. I'm going to get you. It's my turn next time, all right? Okay.
But to be more serious, you know, we had the ISST elections, which is the International Society of Schema Therapy. And Rob, congratulations, mate. You're the El Presidente of the International Society.
Yeah, it's so mad. We had the confidence of the membership to contribute. So it's awesome. I've honestly never been involved in something like that before. So yeah, it was awesome, yeah, to get the confidence of our colleagues. So looking forward to
Stephen Bradbury. If you don't know who Stephen Bradbury is, there's a ice skater that was in the Winter Olympics in Australia, right? And Australia never won a gold medal ever. And back in the 90s, Stephen Bradbury was in the final and everyone in front of him fell over and he sailed through and got the gold medal.
So you feel like you're the Stephen Bradbury of skiing.
Yeah, so I got on the board too, but it was because I was running against nobody.
So, you're very self-depreciating, Chris. Nobody wanted to run against you, mate. They got intimidated.
We got a really exciting 2025 packed in, don't we?
Yeah. We're just launching a bunch of different programs for next year. What have you got on your mind? What have you launched this week?
Okay, so we've launched all our live training in person. If you're in Australia or New Zealand or Singapore, that's just been put up. We've also got Christoph Luce, who's in Germany. He's going to be doing some child and adolescent training, and it's for certification if you wanted to do that. So that's often good time zones for people that are in Australia and also in Asia and also in Europe. So if you're interested, that's on schematherapytrainingonline.com. Rob, you're talking about going over to Bali again.
Yeah, I just launched the level 2 training for 2025. That's going to be in October. And of course, being December, it's only 8 weeks ago that we got back from Bali. So it's still fresh in the memory, but absolutely awesome thing to do in your work life if anyone is inclined to get over to Bali and do the level 2 ISST curriculum. You can check it out at schematherapytraining.com. I mean, the other thing that's exciting, I guess it's not quite launched, but it's almost launched, is you and I, Chris, we've been working hard on putting together a level 3 curriculum, you know, which including a lot of the newer stuff that's been coming out in schema therapy and including stuff like, you know, how to work with pseudo vulnerability modes and really practical stuff. So that's also exciting. Not quite ready though, right? In terms of you can't register yet, but we'll, of course, let you guys know. But today we have actually a really exciting topic, something that's been on my mind for a while. Chris and I, we talk about these things all the time, but I don't think it's been really mentioned anywhere. So it's a bit of a gap out there in terms of a focus in training, and that is schema therapy metaphors, you know, the metaphors that we use as schema therapists to help us in the model.
I don't think you're ready. You're ready.
I'm not ready when it comes to you. I cannot beat you on this. Yeah. You are the Maharaja of metaphor.
I've got really to drop one every 10 minutes. No, 10 seconds. Yeah. Look, I often use these every single session. And you get this classic kind of metaphors that you want to use that stick, and the ones that sort of are more organic and that pop up ways to explain, complex ideas. And,
The organic ones are interesting because sometimes you try to convey something to a client, like they just need a little metaphor. Like it's a bit like this. Mm. But, the first thing I'd say is the whole schema model, especially the mode model, it is a big metaphor, isn't it? Because we talk about modes, we're talking about parts, we have ideas like the vulnerable child, the inner critic, it used to be the old punitive parent, the demanding parent. That's a metaphor. Mm. The idea of an angry child, right? This is a metaphor. We're not telling the client literally that they have a little kid in their stomach, sort of thing.
Let me out. Help me.
It is a metaphor. And so what do we do, right? If you see a vulnerable child, like a child that's distressed and vulnerable, what does that induce in you?
Normally empathy and care and interest. Yeah.
So this is the usefulness of that metaphor, right? Mm. That you relate it. It's like that feeling. It's like little Jenny. It's like a child who's 5 years old. It really pulls for compassion, and that's the utility of the metaphor. I'd like to start with just acknowledging the whole model of modes really is a kind of metaphor. And when we play around with different labels, like you might have the Boolean attack and you end up calling it the bulldozer or something, that's mm-hmm. a kind of metaphor you're trying to evoke, where the mm-hmm. client realizes, yeah, I probably am a bit combative, probably come mm-hmm. out all guns blazing sometimes. Mm-hmm. So let's keep that in mind. First of all, the whole model is mm-hmm. probably a bit of a metaphor. The other thing, I guess, to remember in all of that is if the metaphor doesn't fit or if it doesn't help, drop it as quickly as you can.
Because you do get these people that are very literal and go, what are you saying? I've basically got a homunculus inside of me.
You're calling me a baby. You're calling me a baby right now.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not.
Right? You're calling me a big baby. You're saying, right? So some people might be triggered by it or, at worst, it doesn't land, doesn't help. Or it makes them feel worse, or it might actually induce the inner critic. We found working with certain clients, particularly those from more collectivist cultures, right? In the old days, we would use that parent metaphor a lot. We talk about the demanding parent and the guilt-inducing parent. And for some of those clients, what it would ironically do is trigger more guilt-inducing parent mode. Like when you called it that, then now they're feeling bad because you're talking about their parents and now...
So you have to get out of your own way. I mean, you get a metaphor that gets in the way rather than it facilitating something.
And of course, with the vulnerable child, you often get... I mean, this is just an example. The people who don't like that, often you get people like stoic males. Mm. You get these really like tough, stoic males. They're like... Mm. And then you're like, hey, Tom, bricklayer Tom... You realize you've got this vulnerable child like inside of you. And they're like, What are you talking about, mate? So for those guys, I've found different metaphors are useful rather than the child. And one of the ones I would go for is like the vulnerable channel. You've got that vulnerable channel. It's a bit like a TV, you've got different channels. You turn on the vulnerable channel, it's got a sad story, turn on the angry mode, it's that angry channel, got this kind of angry channel, angry story.
Yeah.
So the channel metaphor. It's a bit like a TV, you reckon? Yeah, mate. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think I can go with that. So being flexible with your metaphors. Drop it if it doesn't work. Drop it like as quickly as you can if you realize that it's going to make things worse. So that's a general sort of overview of this topic. The other thing, I guess, what are you trying to do with a metaphor? It's not always the case, but often I think with a metaphor, you're trying to challenge, really, you're trying to challenge a schema, yeah. So you're trying to challenge a schema, let's say an emotional inhibition schema, right, that says, they might be saying all feelings are bad, feelings need to be suppressed, right? And then you're going to hit them with a metaphor that's like, well, maybe not all feelings are bad, maybe feelings need to be processed. Like, and you say, it's a bit like this, right? And you give them a metaphor. And what you're trying to do.
I got one.
Go on. Hit me.
It's a bit like you go to the mechanic and there's steam coming out the sides and there's coolant coming out the bottom and it's looking like there's an issue. And it's like, no. You can look at the car, but you're not looking under the bonnet. No. We're not looking under the bonnet. We're just going to sit on the bonnet. No. It's fine. We're going to clamp the bonnet down. And I just want you to get the car going. And the mechanic's like, well, can't we look and lift up the bonnet? We just want to see what's there. We want to see what's happening. No. So the detached protector's like, no, clamp. You can't see what's under my bonnet. It's helpful to lift up the bonnet. Let's have a look. Let's help it out. Let's change it. Maybe there's some new parts.
Yeah. Maybe it needs a new engine. Maybe it needs a tune-up. I had an old supervisor once that used to call CBT cognitive panel beating. Like I say, come in and it's all like, you kind of panel beat it out. And you're like, right, it's all looking good. Let's just get it out of here, right? Is it running? Is it, okay, get it out of here. Like, Okay. My thing, I think the most prevalent metaphor in schema therapy is the metaphor of emotional pain. And I personally think it's probably the most important metaphor. I see it used so often. It's almost synonymous now with schema therapy. Like it's basically talking to clients about their emotional distress with a sort of physicalizing metaphor of pain. And so when you look at the client, you're saying, you know, I really do understand that critic. I really do understand that vulnerability, you know, because it's so painful for you to go there. And when that mode's activated, I mean, you have to deal with that pain. Mm. I mean, and relating somebody's emotional distress to this idea of pain, it's often very validating for clients. They know exactly what you're talking about because they do experience it as very painful. And of course, what do you do with something that's painful? It's only natural that you try to pull away from it. Mm. Like anyone doesn't want to experience pain. Right. So I think it's a very validating.
Yeah. And this idea of physical pain. So, if you're needing to heal from that physical pain, you might need to do some physiotherapy or you might need to do some particular, stretches and this sort of stuff. And that can be painful.
Absolutely.
Or you might need to go in for another operation and that's difficult. But the end goal is that, it's for a greater good.
I feel like we've let you loose now with these metaphors. You're just on the cut.
Schemas and spices, the schema spice rack. We heard that one.
There's another one. Schema,
okay, so you got vulnerable child. Vulnerable child is, you got different, it's like ingredients, spices that go, my vulnerable child's different from yours.
This is a training metaphor now.
This is a training metaphor, but it's the same with, clients as well. I'm saying, I've got particular schemas that make up my curry. You got a different color. You're more of a curry. Thai green curry. I'm more of a Sri Lankan curry.
Schema
so I've
curry.
Got a bit more of this and that. So it's kind of like we've got different spices. And I guess it's sometimes helpful to know what that spice is and get a palate for it. So like as a client's going, through the therapy and for a training, personal learning schema therapy, it's good to get a palate for it to know, oh, that's what it tastes like. That's what lemongrass tastes like. That's what chili tastes like.
And what we're talking about there is like when you say lemongrass, you mean like abandonment or distrust.
Yeah. So a particular schema might be a particular flavor and instead of going, okay, you're developing a palate for that. So it's like wine or something. You're tasting the wine and you're kind of going, okay, oh yeah, I get those notes. But if you never drank it before,
What was the wine metaphor that I used? I got off you. I used a wine metaphor the other day.
Yeah. So another one would be, looking at all these modes, we've got hundreds of, like 100 modes or something. What is it? 100?
That's right. We had 86 modes, right, in Dave Edwards' latest paper.
Yeah. So there's a lot of modes and we want to kind of have a parsimonious, easy to understand model. It's important to kind of, those modes are overcompensation, inversion, avoidance, compliance and resignation. Those three mode groups, they're like red wine, white wine, rosé.
Yeah.
White wine is not rosé. White wine is not red wine, but they're wines. But
and then you've got different subtypes, right?
You've got different subtypes. Yeah. So you might have a rosé with a bit of this type of grape or that kind of grape.
Might have a pseudo-vulnerable, Victor rosé.
Yeah. So it's a bit like whiskey. You know, you're the same. I mean, whiskey, you're different. You know, bourbon is not scotch.
Now you're talking my language.
No. Yeah, you're a whiskey drink, I'm a wine drink. You know, if you get a beer, you know, you're looking at, you know, mid-strength versus, you know, craft.
Okay, so this metaphor is we're talking about, like, it's again, it's a training metaphor to suggest that, you know, when you're learning all of the new modes and all of the modes that have been proposed, they're basically like slight variations. They're slight subtypes on overcompensation, you know, or inversion, surrender, and avoidance. And
that, you don't need to reinvent the wine. It's not a new wine. It's like a, you know.
It's all still wine, and you've got these classes. And that can help us feel a bit less overwhelmed by the fact that there's now 86 that have been proposed. So, okay, emotional pain and wine and schema curry.
Give me with one, another one.
Okay.
That's why metaphor.
Okay, look, similar to, and I want to give you a very concrete one, similar to the last one about emotional pain, because what happens, right? People come in and we've got this emotional processing model, right? So our theory of therapy, if I can say in schema mainly, is we want to process emotions and help people process their emotions in a healthy way, okay? And that means also getting your needs met. Whereas clients come in often with a very unhelpful metaphor that, right, some version of emotions are scary and bad and need to be suppressed or controlled, right? Mm-hmm. So they come in with this and you're like, hey, let's process your emotions. They're like, whoa, cowboy, right? I thought you were trying to help me with my feelings, not pull them out.
Yeah. And I want you to find new ways to strengthen my ways of coping.
Correct. And so I found those guys often have their own metaphors, and I've got two for you.
Okay.
One of them is busting the dam.
Okay.
I feel like you're going to bust the dam, right?
Yeah.
And the other one is I feel like you're going to open the can of worms.
The worms.
So clients come in with their own metaphor, which is basically emotional inhibition metaphor. Oh, they go, oh, you're gonna open the can of worms, or oh, you're gonna bust the dam. Now, if they say you're gonna bust the dam. Right. So, example, I have an alternative metaphor for this. You have to acknowledge it. Okay. Right. So you're scared. You think if we do this thing, imagery, we're going to bust the dam. Right. And I sort of often would say something. Look, I don't see myself as a dam buster. Like, I'm not in the business of busting dams. Right. For me, it's a bit more Jenny, my mythical client. It's a bit more like dipping your toes. Yeah. I don't think like this kind of work, I'm not out there busting dams. You know, I'm not there saying let's turn up the emotions onto 1,000,000% and let's
throw you into deep end
kind of thing. There's another metaphor, by the way. Now I'll let you go. I open this up. You know, it's a bit more like dipping your toes. Now, what do you do, right? If it's, you know, not sure about, you know, the beach, a bit cold or whatever. And I guess you could just jump in there, but a lot of people like to sort of, you know, work their way in, they go and put their toes, they check it out, say, look, can we deal with this? And that's what I'm about, you know, when we do this work and we talk about imagery and, you know, emotional techniques. So
another way around that idea is I used to talk about like, okay, you're a chicken and you're kind of like pecking away and you want to keep out, you know, distress and feelings. So you build up these really big walls around you, right? So you're free range chicken, you know, you're pecking away. But suddenly you build up this wall and it's 10 foot high and then it's still not big enough. It's 20 foot high. It's still not big enough. It's 50 foot high. Mm-hmm. Light's not coming in. You get maybe 30 seconds of light coming over the wall on all those different sides. It's 500 meters high, you know, but there's still this chicken pecking away and that's not, you know, you're not really free. You're kind of stuck in a compound around you. You can stop things from coming in, maybe stop most of the feelings from coming in, but there's downsides from being a chicken pecking away inside a compound with 500 meter walls around you.
So there's another cool way to use metaphors. So we've got two things that have come up, and it's actually, we're just thinking out loud actually.
Yeah.
The first way, the thing with the dam busting and the dipping your toes, I'm using a metaphor to challenge their schema-based metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm talking about dipping your toes to challenge their emotional inhibition idea of the dam busting. Right. So I'm using it to kind of a cognitive technique. I'm trying to get them to see that it's another way of seeing this. You could see it as a dam busting thing, but actually it's a bit more like this. Right. It's a reframe, but using a metaphor.
Mm.
Now, what you're doing is slightly different, I think. I would call it something like building mode awareness, right? Or awareness,
downsides of that.
Awareness of a coping mode. Are you aware that you have this kind of wall and how that seems to work for you?
And you are a chicken.
Yeah, and you're a chicken in all of this. But on the one end, it kind of helps the chicken because of blah, blah, blah. But on the other end, right? And that's it's a use of a metaphor, the wall. A lot of clients really like that. A lot of clients really like the wall metaphor.
Another one we got, obviously you and me, you do a lot of training and spend time with other clinicians. And one that we picked up along the way, I'm not sure where, I think it might have been Remco that spoke about it once, was that the broccoli. In terms of back it up, we've obviously got needs, schemas, modes, coping, but back to the needs idea even, it's like we've all got emotional needs and emotional nutrients. That's what I often subscribe to my clients. They're like, you need vitamin C or you get scurvy. You got emotional scurvy now. That's one metaphor. But on a different level, but the thing is that when you've been starved of particular nutrients, for example, if you have only had potato chips and popcorn through, your whole childhood, and then your body is needing the nutrients, and maybe they need, the nutrients that are found in broccoli, right? You have the broccoli, it tastes weird, it's gross, it's like, I'm not used to it, but your body needs it. And I guess this idea that you have particularly things with emotional deprivation, for example, when you've got clients that are, needing connection and attunement and,
I mean, you remind me of clients when you say this, the clients who they've been deprived of attunement and particularly compassion for vulnerability. Yeah. And then when you're leaning in and you give them compassion, they're like, that's too much care. That just sort of disgusts me.
Potato chips. Give me the potato chips. I don't want it.
Yeah, they're like, this is, revolting. You're being kind to my vulnerability.
But it's becoming used to it. It's widening your width of, ability to tolerate.
And it's true, though, as a training metaphor, though, we can say to therapists, well, don't lay on like a kilo of broccoli, right? At the beginning, maybe you got to wind it back a little bit and, And just go.
Oh, a salad with a little bit of broccoli.
A little bit of broccoli. Because the client's having this reaction and you're like, technically it shouldn't happen because you're like, well, the client needs compassion and we give them the compassion. They should be feeling good about it. Sometimes it can feel like too hot.
They don't need a broccoli salad. No broccoli salad.
You're stuffing broccoli down their throat at this stage. So that works. I like the broccoli thing.
I had another one yesterday. I was just thinking about schemas being like a net, right? So
Here we go. This is off the cuff.
On the western part of Australia, there's some shark nets. There's sharks sometimes around. So there's some swimming. Same as Sydney.
We're going to freak out everyone else in the world right now.
You go around and so just to make sure the sharks don't come into the swimming area, there's a shark net. But the sharks, they've got big holes in it, right? So things swim through and fish can swim through, but sharks, they don't swim through, right? So I was talking to a client yesterday and it's like, it's almost like you've got a schema is like a filter. It filters in information. It's like the filter is so thin that it's like there's lots of things that you would just pass through and go, it's just my boyfriend. That's the way he is. And you would let it go and it would pass through. But if it's picking up everything, so if it's like if you're feeling failure or something, you'd have kind of information that would just sort of pass through and it wouldn't really be a big deal. But because it's so thin and so, overwhelming and it hasn't healed, it's picking up all sorts of stuff. And the job isn't really to get rid of the net. It's just about making the gaps in the net wider to allow things pass through, right?
You're super committed to this one.
It's
a lens. It's almost a lens. The other metaphor is the kind of lens idea, right? Yeah. It's a sort of another way of saying that, which is itself another good metaphor. That's a lens.
Yeah.
So often I use that with clients to let them know that, the thing about schemas is when it gets triggered, you're kind of seeing things through that lens. The mistrust thing's there and all of a sudden you're looking at things going, do they mean that on purpose? And we've all been in a place where later you realized, that was just because I was triggered. You know what I mean? But when you're in it, it's hard to see through the lens.
Did I tell you about the sunglass story? Did I tell you about that?
Give it to me.
Okay. I tell it in my workshops about the lens, same metaphor, right? So a couple of years ago, needing some sunglasses and obviously the computers picked that up and I get a Facebook ad through one of my sister-in-law And she said, "Hey, Chris, there's this Ray-Ban sale on. You might be interested." So I go, "Yeah, great. Check it out. Have a look. Oh, wow. Ray-Bans, sunglasses. Oh, that's what I need. Oh, wow. They're really, really heavily discounted. Oh, wow. You can buy three sunglasses for X amount. That's crazy. That's a really good deal. I think I need to get three sunglasses. Click. Let's buy those." And then I realized, oh, no, that looks dodgy website. And I'm like, damn it, I got scammed. It's a scam site, right? So then I'm like, okay, so I've got these, I'd pay for these three sunglasses. They're nice enough to send them out to me. They sent them to me.
So they're like, scammers and they're fake.
They're fake scam sunglasses. So I get them and they're really fake, right? And I thought, well, I can't really take them. I don't want my wife to know that I got scammed on these sunglasses. So I just took them to work. And around the same time, I was doing another training with another, you know, with the EMDR trainer at the time. And she was using the same metaphor about glasses and whatever. So then I'm like, genius. I can use this idea around having filters and I can use this as a tax deduction.
And there you go.
I use them at work. I've got them in my office.
You can pull out your fake sunnies.
Thanks, Annie. Okay, we got more. What else we got?
Okay, I got one. I got two more, really. I'm committed to like a small amount of metaphors, but you've got like a metaphor. You're a metaphorathon, right?
Yeah.
So the other one I like to use quite a lot is this idea of the modes on the bus metaphor. It's an old ACT metaphor, right? We've got to acknowledge that. So, and in particular, I talk about it in the context of the inner critic. I like to use it a lot with the inner critic. And because the inner critic for a lot of clients, I guess you're talking to them about the fact that probably most of us have an inner critic. Like whenever we do workshops with therapists, we say, put your hand up, you've got an inner critic. Like basically everyone puts their hand up. So it's not, the problem isn't that we have one. The problem is that this thing's in charge. Like this thing's been driving the bus for like decades now, telling you where you're going, what are you doing, right? It's been in charge of your life. And through the therapy and what we're talking about, okay, maybe we can kick off, and this is also controversial sometimes, maybe we can kick him off the bus. Probably he's just going to get back on at some stage or, you know, that kind of thing could happen. But the most important thing is that we kick this guy a bit more up the back of the bus, right? He can have a place here perhaps, all right? Or if it gets too much, we can try and kick him out. But the reality is from time to time, you're going to have to deal with the critic. The biggest problem is we don't want him to be driving the bloody bus, right? We don't want him to be driving this thing. And that's where it's been a problem. All right, Jenny, you know, this critic's been really ruling your life for a long time. Yeah. And if she says jump, you say how high. And, you know, if she says you're not good enough, you say, well, of course. So that's been a really useful way to get a bit of diffusion from the critic, you know, a bit of distance from it and undermine the critic in a way and let them know that you can have a boundary with a critic, whether you kick it up the back of the bus or whether you try to kick it off the bus.
Yeah. And I mean, one metaphor, it's a similar sort of theme though. For me, I would say, you know, who's driving the car? Who's the driver right now? Like, it could be other modes as well, right? It could be a coping mode that's like, nah, I don't want to talk about it. Or some sort of a controller kind of thing too, you know, whether or not you kick him, but it's more of a car scenario rather than a bus, because obviously the bus is at the back and you know, it's a bit more space with the critic. Mm. It's harder to stick him at the back of the Tarago.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Now, the other one I like, I mean, unless you've got one more.
Yeah, no, I got a couple. One I thought and I often use is, you know, historically, healthy adult mode has been something that's been left out a little bit. We kind of assume that it's just going to show up and develop. And the analogy I often will talk to clients is like, you know, maybe when we start therapy, I'm telling you that there's a light switch in the corner. Right. And I'm helping you learn, you know, this is where the light switch is. Lights go out, get overwhelmed. You know that over in the corner there's a light switch. Right. I mean, sometimes when people are overwhelmed, it's like the lights go out and you're in a dark room. You can't see anything and you don't know how to get out. You don't even know what the room is. You're disorientated. So it's intense. Right. So I guess part of the healthy adult kind of idea is, you know, like helping the client to go, hold on. Like I said, you know, you're a healthy adult. The way to respond to this is there's a light switch, right? And, you know, literally I will get up and go. So it's almost the lights go out. I'm overwhelmed, but as we're growing and we're learning how to deal with our, you know, with difficulties and build upon our resources, we're kind of edging across and switching the light on. And switching the light on is, you know, the response to the stress of being in the, you know, dark room. That makes sense?
Yep.
And sometimes even getting up and acting it out almost, clients kind of get, okay, I get, you know, that's what I'm doing. That's mm-hmm. that's what we're trying to achieve.
A similar one that I've used, and I think Eckhart Rödinger talks about this in the Contextual Schema Therapy book, is the idea of shifting gears.
Yeah, right. What's that one?
And because sometimes our mode reactions oftentimes actually quite automatic, like it's in your automatic, like a pilot or automatic transmission, and it's just shifting through the gears and it's going up and down and, you know, everywhere. And sometimes if we want to step and want to use a healthy adult, it's about sort of dropping into neutral and sort of, and just actually stepping back and saying, okay, what gear do I need? Do I want to drop into second? Do we want to drop down to first? Do we want to go into third? Like, what actually do I need in this situation? And so it's just that sort of neutral space of stepping back and then selecting, having a space to select, like, actually, what do we need in this situation, rather than just going through automatically. So that's one of the features of the healthy adult is it's intentional, it's aware, right? It's stepping back. It's a bit like being in neutral for a period of time so that you can select the right response. You like that one?
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
I love talking. I could do this.
Metaphorathon.
Oh, yeah, I've got another one.
Give me another one.
Okay. So this is more of a trauma like context. And if people that are, you know that I'm kind of into, not interested, but I've got a background in working.
You're into trauma.
I'm into trauma, but yeah. And look, the analogy is really come out of this idea that, you know, the person isn't ready to do trauma work and all that sort of stuff. And I think schema therapy obviously is a titrated type of approach. It's not like a stage-based approach. We're kind of trying to work with emotion all the way through and we're just trying to titrate it, right? But this idea, like often clients will come to you, and this when I talk with supervisees, you know, you'll get clients coming, I've got a panic attack, or I've got, you know, I can't sleep at night, this sort of stuff. And then you kind of work out through the assessment or other situations that, you know, the client might have had a proper big T trauma. They've had sexual abuse. They've had domestic violence. They've had, you know, horrible adverse events, really next level, not just adverse events, but PTSD type of adverse events. And it's a bit like having a trauma toothache, right? If you get a toothache and I go to you and you're the dentist doesn't go, hey, oh, well, listen, I know you're in a lot of pain. I'll tell you what, go upstairs and see Rob. He's really good with pain and he'll be able to help you distract yourself and use pain management techniques to not, you know, kind of notice that trauma toothache. Mm-hmm. Right? You could do that for years.
Like you could take aspirin every day, like it takes 30 aspirin.
And then and max that up. Let's start taking opiates and stuff like that all the time. But there's a point in time when there are things that you can do to change and to help with the root. You have root canal to deal with the toothache.
You got to get in there and deal with it. You got to get in there and deal with the infection. With
yeah. And I think that's the point. Sometimes people do have trauma, toothaches, and if people are willing, you know, they're willing to look at it and discuss it and put their feet in the water. And if they're able, you know, they're resourced enough.
It's a funny one, you know, that's a good metaphor. And I think when you hit people with that, I think they know actually it's true. When you say, look, we could give you a Band-Aid. We could give you some skills to kind of deal with the pain. And, you know, it's like a kind of aspirin, you know, type situation. You could do that. And that would be understandable. Like who wants to pull the tooth out, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, on some level, like eventually this is something that you're going to need to do.
This is something we need to move through.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to change gears. We're going to talk about axioms.
Not yet. I got one more, baby. Okay. Last one. This one I stole from compassion-focused therapy. It's a common one in compassion-focused therapy. It's called the two students metaphor. Okay. Have you heard of this one?
No. Tell me
so
more.
So it's really about people who are high in punitiveness, right? They really believe in punishment. They're like, you know, if something's bad, it should be punished, you know, and I should be punished and everyone should be punished. So it's people who are high in punishment and low in compassion. And you want to challenge that punitiveness by saying, look, it's a bit like this. Like, you got to imagine that there's two students, right? Mm-hmm. They're kids, maybe they're 6 or 7, 8 years old, right? And one of the students has a teacher who is super strict, super punitive, right? Mm. And they're trying to teach them math or English or whatever. And they stand behind them with a cane, right? And every time the approach is like every time they make a mistake, they're going to whip them with the cane and they're going to scream at them and they're going to, you know, punish them and stand over them and right until they get it right. Yeah. Now, the other student is in another room and it has another teacher. And this teacher is more compassionate, right? Yeah. Yes, they expect
encouraging.
more encouraging. Yeah, they expect certain standards, but they're there also to support them in that and to learn from their mistakes and to support them to grow over time. All right. Mm. And they can accept that things are not perfect and that you're going to screw things up along the way. And they just ask that the child applies themselves and tries to learn from mistakes. Okay. Now, first of all, you can ask, in this situation, which child would you like to be?
Mm.
Would you like to be child A or child B?
I remember doing this in a group situation once. Same sort of deal, but it was experiential. So it was more the whole group had what person leaving the group, and he had to pick an object in the room, right? Mm. And the person had to walk around and pick the object. And all the group had to kind of either be punitive or critical.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was that like to have that?
Yeah.
And I walked out of the room and they came back and then they'll be encouraging and supportive.
Oh, wow.
And to emotionally go, wow.
It's a very experiential technique. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. Well, the point is, like, I think most people, they might not be able to be kind to themselves and to give themselves compassion. But when you put it in the context of a child, in the metaphor, even a hardcore punitiveness type person can see what's actually most helpful for a child to learn and to have well-being.
Yeah, yeah,
so that can be a way, again, of undermining the schema. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you got one more.
Okay. Okay. So last one. This is our last metaphor.
Yeah. Hey, when clients go, I don't see the point about talking about childhood, that kind of stuff, right? So that's often, you hear about that. The one that I often will say, well, it's a bit like, you've got a sprinkler, right? It's watering grass, but the sprinkler it's got poison. It's the water is just not, it's not good for the grass, right?
Okay.
So it's kind of like, but it's connected to like a bore, and it's this kind of reservoir of pain and reservoir of old stuff that's under the ground. Okay. And at the point in time where we need to kind of tap into the reservoir and decontaminate the reservoir and change that up, heal the reservoir. Therefore, that's why I'm kind of talking about the old stuff. So, you're worried about your grass and your garden not thriving. Well, there's a point in time when we need to get down into the reservoir.
Get down into the bore. Yeah. By the way, guys, Chris is here gesticulating through this whole thing. It sort of adds to the metaphor. Yeah. So there's a lot of variations on this, like, we got to get in there.
Yeah.
We got to get in there sort of thing. Now, this is a nice segue because actually, the second part of this pod, we wanted to focus on schema therapy axioms.
Axioms. Now, right? I had no idea what an axiom was until you started using the word axiom. So tell me what an axiom
is. Yeah, yeah. It's like a saying, like a key saying in a field, right?
Yeah, it's like an instructive kind of component, isn't it? It's like a teaching kind of...
A key teaching point. And you bring up actually several of your metaphors today, Chris, are variations on an axiom that I really like. And the axiom is, you've got to feel it to heal it.
To heal it.
All right. So you can say that, like we say it often in trainings. Most therapists believe this implicitly, right? Like they just kind of, once you say it, they go, well, of course. Not all clients go along with this, by the way. A lot of them have a different axiom, you've got to avoid it to heal it or something. You've got to suppress it. You've got to control it. So this is a good one, even in a training context or even with the client to get along to that sort of state. And your metaphors all kind of reinforce that idea. The tooth thing, our emotional pain metaphor, these are all different variations on you've got to feel it to heal it. So make use of it, guys. What's an axiom that you like?
Oh, look, there's a couple. I mean, I like the idea of, it's more of a training one. So some of these are more related to training and therapists. So one is-
So we're not saying you have to go to every client and say you have to feel it to heal it.
Feel it to heal it. No, it's this, your angle. Another one is like, strike while the iron is cold.
Ooh.
So I'm not sure where I picked this up from, but particularly with things like, angry child mode, for example, or maybe you got an aggrandizing kind of presentation, overcompensating. You can strike while it's hot when the schema is activated and it's there. But with some of these things, you also want to strike when the iron is cold. So, it's about sort of talking about, Greg, like last week you barbecued me pretty badly because I was late. I think we need to unpack that and talk about that and let's work out what happened in terms of your schemas and modes and what could have
like
done
now different. That they're deactivated.
Now they're deactivated. So strike while the iron is cold.
That's okay. So sometimes capitalizing on the fact that they're in a healthy adult, or maybe they're even in a coping mode, and they're not so activated that you might be able to address an issue, right? Bring up an emotional awareness type issue, or even an empathic confrontation type issue. I guess the inverse is also true. Sometimes you want to strike while the iron is hot. You know, that their client is clearly in a place where the emotions are hot, and let's make use of that in the session. Let's do something with that. So I guess both of those things can work. This next one is going to sound a bit weird, but stay with me. I got this one from, I very clearly remember being in Bali a couple of years ago doing a workshop with Chris Hepworth.
Yep.
And when we do our retreats over there. Mm-hmm. And he had this thing up on the board, and it was go slower, go deeper. Right. And at first look, it sounds like a kind of creepy axiom, but stay with me. So you're thinking about in a therapeutic context, you know, when is it that you need a reminder to go slower and to go deeper?
Yeah.
Like during the process of attunement, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yep. Mm.
You know, that attuning into emotions rarely happens in a fast way.
Yeah.
Like with someone who's just gone 100 miles an hour. And the process of attunement also, we want to go deeper in the sense we want to arrive at an understanding about what it's all about. You know,
and also people are very fixated on techniques, aren't they? So this is idea of, you know, sort of do the technique, get them out the door, you know, sort this out.
There's another metaphor, or there's another axiom.
The other one is like, you know, you want to be with rather than do to, right? There so. Same sort of idea, this idea of kind of you don't want to do them imagery or do them a chair work exercise or mode work and chairs exercise. Like you want to be with them and be attuned to that need and what they need in that moment, you know. Yeah. Mode test.
There's some of the important ones. Have you got any more sayings, I guess, either in a schema context or in a training context?
Right, yeah, steam.
Mate, if I say metaphor, you'll pop up.
I've got more metaphors.
No, I think I need to set good boundaries about the metaphors with you. This is look, guys, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any interesting metaphors or sayings, you can reach out to info@schematherapytraining.com and let us know. And let us know if you enjoyed the pod or if you have any feedback or even any topics for the future that you'd love us to maybe cover and to talk about in a schema therapy practice. That's it for today, guys. I think we covered a couple of really kind of interesting bits of practice. It's something that I think we all do and we all kind of thread into the work, and rarely do we step back and document it, or, you know, I've never seen a list of metaphors in a schema context. Yeah. So we hope.
And I just wanted to say thanks to all the people that do listen to, you know, us, you know, wax lyrical about, you know, this topic. It's in the end of 2024, and, you know, hopefully we get this out by the end of 2024, if not early 2025. And we just want to thank you guys for, listening to us. We feel very privileged, and it's often strange when we talk to people and they say that they're listening to us, because it just feels like it's just me and Rob talking. We forget that people do listen, and we're quite a little bit surprised sometimes. So we're really, you know, to be honest, it's a real privilege and very humbled by that. And
it's awesome. It's awesome. And look, to celebrate, guys, as well, most of you probably know by now, we have a schema therapy based course for everyday living. It's called the Schema Therapy Solution. You can check it out at, literally the website is schematherapysolution.com. And it's a course that Chris and I and Wendy put together this year, and we ramped up with that. And it's a sort of reinventing your lifestyle course for everyday folks, for everybody. It could be for clients to help, you know, as a kind of sidecar to the therapy. It could be for the lady at the tuck shop who's struggling with their inner critic and you think that, you know, they could benefit from knowing their schemas. So to kind of know your own schemas style course. So if anyone listening is interested, for the whole of 2025, starting from the 1st of January 2025, you can use the code CONNECT60, okay, for a 60% discount. All right. This is a celebration, a big thank you to you guys. This is episode 50, okay? Woo-hoo! Episode 50 of our podcast. I can't believe we got here.
This is hours. Like,
And almost 5 years, right? We started this thing in 2020 and it's going to be 2025 in like 3 weeks. So thanks everyone for listening. We've got some really cool pods actually planned, but we're not going to give you a taster yet. Yeah. So you're just going to have to tune in. Thanks for listening, guys. See you in the new year.
Arrivederci. Bye.